in the process of making. Episode 5, Scrambled Eggs.
You're all fired up. You're out of control. You're grabbing bits. You're on a roll. I'm in my dreams. I'm in the flow of my dreams. It's scrambled eggs. So go, man, go.
You know that strange feeling when you're just dropping off to sleep and suddenly an idea pops into your head? That perfect line of dialogue or the solution to that problem that's been bugging you for weeks? That dropping off to sleep space you're in? We call it a liminal space, a twilight zone between one state and another. It's kind of like standing in a doorway. You're neither here nor there. But somehow that in-between place lets you see things differently. Dave Brown here, your host for this creative journey we're on, where my mate, John Bode, and I are applying the Paperboat 7 creative principles to the task of attempting to make something out of nothing, inspired by the animating idea, Explore 7. I remember years ago at Patch Theatre, we were stuck on how to end a particular show. We'd been wrestling with it for weeks. Then one night, I'm riding home on my bike in the dark suburban back streets of Unley after rehearsal, that velvety time when roads are empty and the streetlights create pools of luminance in the dark. I was mentally worn out. My head was mulch. My mind was drifting. I wasn't really focused on anything, just enjoying the sensation of riding my bike in the dark, floating in that space between thinking and not thinking. And there it was, the ending we needed appearing in my mind like it had been there all along, just waiting for me to stop trying so hard to find it. That's what happens in these liminal spaces, these threshold places where we're neither fully in control nor completely letting go. It's like being in the wings just before you step onto stage, that electric moment of in-between. You see it in kids play all the time, that magical state where a cardboard box becomes a spaceship, where reality and imagination dance together. That's why I've always loved making theatre for young audiences. They live in these liminal spaces naturally, these places where transformation is possible. These in-between spaces are so precious to the creative process. They're where the whimsy and logic of our brains can meet and mingle, where the conscious and unconscious mind can have a conversation. And sometimes, if we're lucky, that's where we find the surprising answers we've been looking for.
The art of not knowing.
The empirical evidence that comes from artists talking about creativity highlights the critical importance that letting go has in manifesting these liminal states. Writer Sue Wolfe alludes to it in her lovely little book about creativity entitled The Mystery of the Cleaning Lady. She writes, "I tried to control my wayward imagination, but again and again I discovered that I couldn't create fiction when I was in conscious control of it. The work seemed stifled and artificial and counterfeit, and ultimately the writing bored me. To my astonishment, I found that I had to put all ideas of control out of my mind, and then my writing became a process of chaos and uncertainty, full of unexpected contingencies, accidents, and sometimes anxious, sometimes jubilant leaps of the imagination. But the outcome seemed orderly, with a sense of inevitability about it." I love how surprised she is by her discovery. Robert Lepage is one of my favourite theatre directors. He says, "I believe that the only real invention comes out of chaos. So it's better not to know where you're going when you start off if you want to accomplish something good." The brilliant Australian cartoonist Michael Lunig tells us, "The drawings I've done that I've liked the most are things I don't entirely understand. They come with a great drive and conviction from within, but I can't really analyse them. These are the better pieces." Novelist Alex Miller says, "For me, it has never been possible to plot or plan a novel beyond a very few basic elements. The story reveals itself to me as I proceed with the book, and it is nearly always a surprise." This quote from Alex Miller is a really good description of what I call retrospective meaning making, which is a core idea embedded in the Paper Boat's 7 creative principles. All of these anecdotal descriptions are supported by a raft of scientific research that reinforce the idea that unconscious, uncontrolled thinking is essential to the creative process.
Letting go of your need to be in control might be the key to making something original.
The Hunter-Gatherer Mastermind.
Scientists have identified a brain network, which they've named the Default Mode Network. The Default Mode Network, which is so named because it refers to the brain regions that are active when a person is not focused on any particular task or external stimulus. They discovered this by happy accident in the mid-90s, after the invention of an instrument they called the Positron Emission Tomographic Scanner, or PET, PET scanner. The PET scanner was a whirring white machine monster that used radioactive fluorine to map the human brain's consumption of glucose. In other words, its consumption of energy. So when this machine was fresh out of its box, they set about calibrating it using a human volunteer who was instructed to totally relax and stop thinking about anything. The young woman did as she was asked, but her brain didn't stop consuming glucose. Part of it kept consuming energy. Part of it kept on working. The scientists tried this on other people. The same thing. The same part of the brain, or the same parts of the brain, kept on keeping on. No mapping of the brain to that point had identified this network, which stretched from the front of the brain up to the top, along the back, down the bottom, and across to the sides. It was an enormous network of interconnectedness. The scientists called their discovery the Default Mode Network because when the brain wasn't engaged in any particular task, that network lit up. In other words, it's the brain's default or baseline state when your mind is wandering or when you're daydreaming. It switches off when you're doing active work in the world at large. It switches on as you dream. Have a listen to this little McCartney song snippet written by John, where McCartney dreams about his long-lost love, Violet Greenslade, who we'll be hearing a lot more about later in the series.
Every night there's a beautiful light comes into my head and makes everything bright. She dances and sings, but the wonderful thing is she gives me a song for tomorrow. Ultraviolet, what a beautiful sign. How she shines so bright. She can make everything bright. I love to fill the night with ultraviolet light.
his dream gives him a song for tomorrow. This alludes to a technique I and others use to draw on the potentialities offered by liminal spaces by purposefully seeding an idea for your unconscious brain to process during sleep. Sleep seeds, I call them. I use the technique a lot. Last night, for example, just before I went to sleep, I thought about what I was going to write about for this episode. The question I posited was what interesting anecdotes might support an understanding of liminal spaces. So when I got up this morning, the words flowed pretty easily, and the anecdotes just popped up in the process of writing. This is the default mode network at play. There's an unconscious reverie of sorts happening overnight, that is, scanning, filtering, and associating thoughts and ideas while you sleep and dream. You're probably familiar with the real 22-year-old Paul McCartney story of him waking up on a spring morning. It's 1965 in London. He's living in the attic of Jane Asher's house, and he wakes up with a tune in his head, fully formed. And knowing how fleeting memory can be, he gets up and he goes to the piano and he locks it in, using the lyrics, "Scrambled eggs, oh my baby, how I love your legs," which of course became the song Yesterday, described by Rolling Stone magazine as the best song of the 20th century. So there you go, Paul McCartney, the real one. You can thank your brain's default mode network for the scrambled eggs of yesterday. Ah, dear brain, you are truly amazing.
You're all fired up, you're out of control. You're grabbing bits, you're on a roll. I'm in my dreams, I'm in the flow of my dreams. It's scrambled eggs, so go and go. You're cooking tunes, you're brewing songs. Brain, you're cooking up a storm. I'm in my dreams, I'm in the flow of my dreams. It's scrambled eggs, so go and go. You do the work when I'm asleep, then next day you earn your key. I love your brain, you're just insane. I love you lots, I love your brain. Play the tune and make it pay. The words will come another day. I'm in my dreams, I'm in the flow of my dreams. It's scrambled eggs, so go and go.
In my dreams, I'm in the flow. It's scrambled eggs, so go, man, go. The importance of seeking out liminal spaces, both inner and outer, it's all part of the creative process. And yes, this won't surprise you at all. The default mode network is more developed in highly creative people. So there you go. That all ties in with everything we've been discussing thus far. Unconscious, uncontrolled thinking, whimsy and dream, is connected to creativity in a big way. As I've mentioned before, I've seen so many creative processes self-destruct because lead creatives and directors have lost their nerve and taken control way too early. You really have to wait until the content starts to reveal where it needs to go. A pathway opens up when bits and pieces start to congeal and coalesce, and that needs time and patience and self-discipline. You have to hold your nerve. You have to hold your nerve.
We're making something, we're not sure what. We'll know when we get there, we'll know what we got. Until that time, we're walking the line in the process of making something from nothing.
Of all the characters that John threw my way across the early months and years of this project, my favourite is a fella called Neville Herbert. He's a Cockney delivery man who, I imagine, immigrated to the Australia of our story world as a young man and developed his parcel delivery service.
Weird wisdom and talking doors.
I was doing a delivery and I walked up and a number on the door was number 7. And I knocked on the door and it said, I'll be back in an hour. So I thought, got to wait for an hour. What am I going to do for an hour? So I was standing there looking at the number. And I thought, you know, when you say a number over and over again, it starts to lose its meaning, doesn't it? When you think about it, 7, 7, 7. I'm standing there for 20 minutes, looking at this number, 7, 7. 40 minutes go by, 7. I've said it 1,000 times, and suddenly, I don't recognise the number. I'm looking at it like I looked at it for the first time in my whole life. Then I turned around and I thought, you can do that with a window. So I started window, window, and door, door, and suddenly, it was like I was born right there in the doorway. It was like I just woke up. And I looked around and I thought, what is this life? Why do people worry when they don't have to? What is this? It was like I came down from another planet and was looking at this planet and thinking, you're a bunch of peanuts, ain't you? You just got to get on with life and enjoy it. Look at that beautiful blue sky. What you on about? Everything changed from that moment on. So I started going to different places and, you know, whenever I deliver something, I give them a little piece of advice. You don't have to do it that way, do you? Why do you do it that way? Because you've done it that way for throughout your whole life. Why don't you change it? It's easy. You just got to look around and change it.
Neville's one of those people who keeps you guessing with a kind of simple, skewed, sort of weird wisdom that takes you by surprise. I love the line, I knocked on the door and it said, I'll be back in an hour. There's a kind of odd logic there. I love that. And the number on the door, that idea of noticing something and then over-attending to it until you go beyond what you've noticed to some other place, it's kind of transcendental. Touching on the ideas of mantra and trance, the liminal space. But Nev's just a simple guy. I mean, he's never heard of transcendental meditation. He's just the bloke down the street who goes to work each day delivering parcels, noticing the ordinary and finding his own level of extraordinary. Discovering the world empirically and building ideas from his own experiences and levels of understanding.
Where'd you find the people who seem to play the world like a game and play it by their own rules and always win and always take what they need but never more than their share and always seem to make good with what they've got?
Where'd you find the people who seem to just look up at the sky and have a brand new lease on life? People that you want on your team, 'cause they always seem to be the ones to get it right. I think it's got something to do with me favourite number. I think it's got something to do with me favourite number, if you know what I mean.
I never quite know what Neville Herbert means, but I almost do, and that's what makes him interesting to me. His way of thinking and seeing the world, it's Neville.
Well, yesterday,
a thought
popped into my head.
Into my mind.
Right in my head.
Where did it come from?
I didn't think to myself, look, I'm going to have a thought now. It just was there. Right in my head. Into my head. Don't know where it came from. Don't know where any of my thoughts come from, actually. Do you? Hey, do you know what you're going to think next? Where do they go? What is it? Where is it?
John's other characters, like McCartney, Gordon Oliver, Special Agent 7, are essentially parodies of celebrities, whereas Neville Herbert, is a garage philosopher, as is John himself, and me too. And I'm thinking Neville's character gets close to John parodying himself. John and his partner Beck have two teenage daughters, and I'm sure you get a sense of that in this next little ditty of Neville's.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1. I need you to clean your room, and don't say you'll do it tomorrow, because it was a pigsty yesterday, and tomorrow it'll be a pigsty. And I'm being very harsh on the pig. Sorry, pig, you're not that disgusting. I need you to come through. Whatever you do, I feel like a stew.
What?
Feel like a stew?
No,
well, yeah, I'm hungry.
That doesn't make any sense, does it?
I'm really hungry.
To make it rhyme, and that's it.
If you just put it in, you make it rhyme.
You can put
it in.
If you are hungry,
you can put that in.
Just make stuff up just to make it rhyme.
Ah, Neville. Ah, it's great, isn't it? The one moment we seem to be dealing with getting a kid to clean up their room, and then the song does this crazy little meta thing with Neville seeming to be in dialogue with himself about the pathetic rhyming effort he's made in the song. And with that comes this realisation that maybe Nev has actually been talking to himself all along about getting his own life in order. That I need you to clean up your room is Neville talking to himself, not about his room, but about his life. The greater truth lies just beyond our understanding, both for the artist and the audience, maybe.
I didn't listen at all. I should have listened from the start. I should have known that you would never let me down. I hang my head because it's me who let you.
I've included this song snippet from John here because although it clearly isn't Neville Herbert who's singing it, it has the same sort of intimacy I feel when I'm listening to Nev. I honestly don't know what prompted John to write this, but I can feel the emotion in it. Is he talking to his daughter? His partner? I must ask. but I really like the song, and so I've just intuitively put it in. Somehow it feels right to me, even though logically it doesn't really fit in at this point. Sometimes you just have to go with your gut. And that says something about the creative process. The choices we make are often intuitive. They come from a felt meaning that guides you.
I'm in my dreams. I'm in the flow. I'm in my dreams. I'm in the flow. So go and go.
And so we find ourselves at the end of another episode of In the Process of Making. In this episode, we've explored the essential role of that powerful default mode network, churning away in our brains, making connections while we're not doing anything in particular, maybe going for a walk or snoozing or just daydreaming. This journey through episode 5 has supported the notion that creativity flourishes best when we resist our urge to control it. When we let our minds wander into those liminal spaces and allow the magic to happen. It's kind of like trying to catch a butterfly. The moment you lunge at it with a net, it flutters away. But sit quietly in the garden long enough and it might just come and land on your shoulder. You know, I've spent countless hours recording voice memos on my morning bike rides. And at times it feels like, ah, I've stumbled upon something very special. Yes, an aha moment where you think, that's it, that's what I've been looking for. Only to get home and discover on reviewing the genius idea that I'd captured now sounds suspiciously like the ramblings of a slightly deranged man on a bicycle. And that's exactly the point. We have to be willing to look foolish to make those wild leaps, to trust that our unconscious mind knows what it's doing even when our conscious mind is screaming, "You are an idiot." And maybe you are. But keep on nudging those ideas to see if there's something there that's worthwhile. This is Dave Brown signing off for now. In the meantime, unleash your idiocy as you dance to the music of your unconscious reveries.
In the Process of Making is conceived by Dave Brown and John Bode and presented by The Paper Boats. Please subscribe to our podcast and recommend it to your friends, lovers, and others, and go to our sevenwell.org website to find out more. Episodes are released on the seventh day of each month on all your favourite podcast platforms. And be watching out for Seven Well Snippets, bits and pieces of Seventological Sunshine released randomly each month on socials and available also from the website. And did you know?
The human mind can involuntarily take in 11 million bits of information per second. The most generous estimate is that humans are consciously aware of around 49 of these. That is, seven lots of seven. Interesting.